Colonel Burke, reel 12.
After you'd finished your training course, you began operating in the Armentier sector again between April and July of 1915. Could you tell me about the sort of jobs you were given with your team?
Well, you were given a map reference. You never saw your target, because you've got to remember we lived, as I always say, below ground. We never saw above ground. And you were given a map reference. It might be part of a farm building. It might be what the brigade commander or the higher authorities thought was an observation post. And you were told to strafe that. And you were given an idea of it, that you'd fire, say, 12 rounds, then stop, and make sure that your guns were still on target, and then fire probably another 12 rounds. Well, you never knew very rarely knew whether you'd hit the object or what, because we hadn't got what they call OPIPs, observation posts, like the artillery had. And anyhow, our range, whereas the artillery were firing 4 or 5 miles, we were firing 300 or 400 yards, you see?
Yes.
And it was too dangerous to try and poke your head up to see if you had.
Is it possible for you to distinguish between the various kind of jobs you had? Or was it all much of a muchness?
All much of a muchness.
Yes.
You see, it was static warfare. There was nothing really, but one battalion may have spotted, they have certain that there's an observation post there, because the fire always seems to come from that. So you were sent over to see if you could deal with it.
Tell me how you operated with your team. I mean, exactly where would you set up your gun, and what kind of arrangements would you make in order to make yourself working
well,
and efficient?
They put them in the support line for the reason being that they wouldn't be captured if the enemy made a real big raid on your frontline trenches. You had time to pick these things up and run away, you see, with them, so as to save them. But so you were more or less always in the support line. Or you could even be in a shell hole between the front line and the support line, a big Black Maria shell hole, if it was deep enough. But that meant that you were cut off from your men except by night, because you couldn't get to them.
Would you make any special arrangements to set the thing up and make yourself more comfortable?
Well, in what way? I mean,
did you create what one could loosely describe as a mortar post?
Well, yes, you had number 1, 2, 3, 4 gun, which were all in their posts, if people like to call it that. And if you were going to do a shoot, you generally call your number ones together, tell them what you wanted. You didn't go and check the range on the clinometer, because it was quite easy to do. And they were experienced men. I mean, they'd had the training, and you knew they could do it. So that you stood with one or other of the guns, you see. Occasionally, you might be, having given your orders and told them when to fire, you might go up the front line. There might be an armoured opening where you could use your glasses. But, you see, you could only see straight across the top. You couldn't see if it was anything below you were hitting, something inside the trenches. You could, if it was a derelict building, which you knew they were in, and you were firing it, then you could see that you'd hit it or not.
Right.
Yes, well, you, as I said previously, you cut the trench away so as to give your gun a field of fire. But around a traverse, you'd keep your ammunition not quite absolutely against the gun in case of explosion. As I say, the first the first one of these things, you just dropped the bomb down. It came onto a firing pin, which exploded a cartridge, which exploded in turn the bomb and blew it out of the mortar. But each post was more or less the same. You disturbed as little ground as possible, naturally, because it would probably be seen by the enemy, although aerial photography at that time wasn't as good as it was later on. You were very small, so you didn't need any camouflage net. I mean, the whole thing wasn't any more than a machine gun post would be, you see, no bigger.
You were saying?
Well, when we first started this job, it was known as the Suicide Club.
Why?
Well, for two reasons. First of all, because whenever your guns opened fire, they drew fire, and therefore it wasn't rifle fire they drew, it was artillery. And secondly, it was such a Heath Robinson effort of a gun that it could easily blow up and kill you itself, you see.
I wonder if you found, during these two periods you spent, one early in 1915 and one...
14?
Yes, one late in 1914 and one in the midsummer of 1915. When you're at home, what kind of effect was the war having on civilian life? Anything that you were able to detect?
Oh, well, there were rationing, of course, but... otherwise, I don't think anything. There was a rationing of petrol, naturally, and a rationing of food. But all the theatres and that were packed, and people seemed to go out, and you could get some sort of a meal and enjoy yourself, and there was plenty of drink.
Did you talk much to relatives or associates back in England about the war, about what was going on out in France?
Well, yes, but you know... You knew very little of it, and it annoyed one, especially if you had done a big raid on a battalion scale, which would be, you see, 200 yards wide, and you had penetrated the enemy to a depth of, we'll say, quarter of a mile or half a mile, brought back prisoners. There was no intent of staying there. Brought back prisoners, and then. You'd read in the paper, no action on the Western Front. It didn't seem to warrant where you'd lost probably 50 men killed and equal number wounded. It didn't warrant a thing. Mm. It wasn't big enough, even although the war hadn't been on 2 years. Mm. It used to annoy everybody terribly that very little action on the Western Front.
Some of the people I've spoken to have made the observation that after some experience of the war, on trips at home, they found it rather difficult to really make contact with people who hadn't served in France and who hadn't been part of the
war. Oh, yes, I think so. Simply because of this thing of the press. They sort of said nothing was going on, you see. It's like in the Second World War where you had this period behind
When you returned to France in October 16 to the Somme sector, and the great battle that had begun on the 1st of July was sort of limping to an end, well, what were your impressions of the conditions of the men that you returned to after that?
You see, I really hadn't seen them before. But if you mean the battalion, they were battle-weary.
Can you give me any examples?
You've got to remember they had been fighting since the 1st of July, more or less without a stop. Even if the attack stopped on their own section or their own divisional front for a few days, they were still on the line. They were still heavily bombarded. And they were...
Did that battle weariness demonstrate itself in any particular ways?
Yes. Not to the extent that men got more frightened or anything, but they got more short-tempered. When they were out of the line, they were, you know, bored. They'd lost a lot of their pals. They were sometimes morose.
You could detect a difference in the morale of the men?
Well...
From the earlier period?
Yes, but... It was frustration, I think, more than anything, that they'd lost so many people and made so little ground, and they were wondering, starting to wonder, why. But there was no feeling of giving up in them. Mm-hmm. They were just wondering why.
Did they?
The casualties were growing.
What sort of answers were they coming up with to that question?
Well, they hadn't an answer, that's just it. You were told far less about the war by your superiors than you were in the last one. Mm. They were just ordered to do something, and they did it. It either turned out satisfactory or an utter failure. And even their officers couldn't tell them, because we didn't know, really, you see. You were briefed before a battle, but then... It was difficult to find out whether there had been any success, except you knew what had happened to you, whether you'd gone forward or whether you'd gone forward and been driven back, or whether you'd gone forward and stayed there. You knew your own sector, but you knew nothing what was happening to anyone else. Mm. And when you came out into billets, you saw these endless lines of walking wounded and ambulances, and you wondered how long we could exist. It was that sort of thing. Mm. It was apprehension. It wasn't demoralization. Nothing like it.
Mm. The Somme was a new sector for you. How did it compare with the one you were more familiar with in the Armentières area?
Well, wherever you went in the Somme, it was derelict. You see, we'd gone forward and there were no real house up or anything. You came to a wood... And there was nothing standing higher than 3 feet, because the wood naturally had gone to make fires for the troops back. But, it was real devastation, and miles and miles and miles of shell holes, practically interlocking, because by then both sides had got massive artillery, you see, and shells galore. Mm.
What about the trenches themselves? Did they differ in any way from the Armentières?
No, only if you captured German ones, which were much deeper than ours, and they had deep dugouts. And I think that, again, was the reason for our troops being much more ready for battle than the German was, because, for instance, if a bombardment came, they'd put up their waterproof sheet, pin it across the Peridome and stand under it. Now... It wouldn't have stopped a bullet, it wouldn't have stopped shrapnel, it wouldn't have stopped anything, but it made them feel safe. And they were listening to the battle noises all day long, whereas the German had his sentries posted and everybody was down in a deep dugout. So if we were going to attack, there was, well, hell let loose in the way of noise going on. They had to come out into this and they were nervous. And therefore you got much more of element of surprise, because he had to get into his firing position and bring his rifle up and aim, whereas you were already been out in it all the time and got accustomed to it.